Today and off, Mike, summer festivals being planned, people heading to the beach and concerts, ball games. What a departure from this time last year. We're right at the start of summer, and it seems the nation and Northwest Indiana are truly emerging from this year-long battle with the pandemic. We'll talk about all the events that are coming up, and Northwest Indiana is a hot market. That's for one Chicago area firm is investing $20 million to build an industrial building without any tenants signed yet. So all this on Off Mic. Welcome to Off Mic on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Michael Puente, a reporter with WBEZ in Chicago. This is our first really live show in a long time. Here's a little secret. A lot of the show is pre-taped, so I didn't get a lot of time. I don't get a lot of time in front of a hot mic like I'm doing now, so I'm going to have to really watch what I say over here. There's no, you're going to hear some of the, you know, some of the bumps. A lot of the things I say is usually scripted, so when I go off script, that's when mistakes happen.
That's when you're off mic.
That's right. And that other voice right there is Lakeshore Public Radio's very own Tom Maloney. Hey, Tom, how you doing?
Mike, great to be in studio with you on a gorgeous Friday. I'll take it. 90 degrees out today. Do I dare say? Feels like summer.
It feels like summer. We're dressed like it's summer in the studio. Too bad you can't see us. I got a flowery blue shirt on.
I got my boat Hawaiian shoes on.
So this is really going to be somewhat of a fly by the seat of our pants show, kind of a little bit more relaxed. You know, I hearken back. There used to be a show at this time slot called Casual Fridays with my friend Jerry Davich. And so we're going to be kind of a la Jerry Davich a little bit today.
We are dressed casually for a Friday.
It is very casual. But, you know, it's not going to be all fun and games later on. We're going to be talking to Karen Lauerman, who is the head of a group, the Lake County Economic Development Alliance, who their mission is basically to get firms to Northwest Indiana to invest. And they actually identify underutilized or abandoned industrial sites for future use. And they've landed a firm from Des Plaines, Illinois, to invest $20 million in an industrial facility where there's no tenants yet, but they're hoping to get tenants in there. So we'll be talking to Karen in just a little bit. And later on, we're going to be talking to Cheryl Ray Stout, WBEZ's award-winning and veteran sports contributor. We're going to be getting a little bit of a sports update, but also about this controversy about the tennis player who right now is refusing to do interviews with the press. There's a lot of, you know, consternation about that. So we'll get her perspective as a sports reporter who relies on athletes making themselves available to the press. May seem like a minor thing to the general public, but it's a major thing in the sports world. So we'll get to that. But for right now, we just kind of want to sit back a little bit and kind of like take it all in. It's beautiful outside. It's hot. It's summer. And, you know, what a difference a year makes, Tom, because this time last year, you know, folks were actually trying to figure out how are we going to do this summer with the pandemic. You know, we're always kind of optimists. We're always kind of like, well, you know, things are outside. It's not going to be that bad. But, you know, things were shutting down. People were getting sick. You know, we were just probably at the start of this mask mandate. I know I have to wear a mask everywhere. I have my mask now, so it hasn't really 100% left us. I don't know if it's ever going to leave us because, you know, some people just feel comfortable, whether they're vaccinated or not, to wear a mask. But, you know, a lot of advertisements, Tom, out there about summer concerts, local events, things that just were evaporated last year.
Yeah, I think for me, being an avid sports fan, and we'll definitely talk to Cheryl about this later on in the show, but Stanley Cup playoffs are happening. And here in America, you know, when the games are being played in Carolina and Nashville, they're being played in Las Vegas, they're being played in both Tampa and Miami for hockey games, out east in New York and D.C. There are fans in the stands. But when they're playing in Montreal, when they're playing in Toronto, they're playing, you know, north of the border right now in Canada, there's no fans in the stands. And so you go from watching a really loud, raucous arena, you know, at, you know, the 6 o'clock game. And when that one wraps up, all of a sudden the, you know, the 8:30 game is on and there's nobody in the stands. And it's a very, very jarring feeling because we remember watching, you know, baseball games last summer, the White Sox making that postseason run. A lot of fun to watch, but nobody in the stands. Of course, now Wrigley and Sox Park getting loaded with people. 60% attendance, I think, is what's allowed now.
Right, right.
You know, concerts are coming back. You know, there are going to be live musical acts. There already have been some here in the region as well. I know there's a country concert over in Valpo a couple of weeks ago with some local musicians, and it's happening. It feels like summer is finally coming back. But, you know, you bring up that point, man, the masks and how comfortable do people feel whether or not they are vaccinated or not. And it's how comfortable do they feel in any and all of those social situations. Have you gone to a restaurant since things have started to open up?
Oh, yeah. You know, the thing about me is we have been going to restaurants for a while now, and I that really never really kind of scared me. Maybe it should have, but we had our mask on, and so I have been doing things maybe I shouldn't have, you know. But, you know, we're there now, and I just think right now there's still just a certain comfort level with certain people having the mask on. I don't see a problem with it. I know people are saying, especially people who may lean towards being anti-vaxxer, saying, well, the vaccination helps. Why do you need to wear a mask? You know, I think it's just a comfort level. Certain restaurants and businesses still require it. I think to, you know, alleviate some fear that the public may have, and even the workers. I mean, the workers don't know who's coming in, who's been vaccinated or not. And here's the thing, even if you've been vaccinated, you can still get the virus and still be asymptomatic. Mm-hmm. You know, nothing's 100%. We're hoping it's 100%, but let's face it, you know, this thing may be with us for a while. And in certain cultures, they are always wearing masks. We've always seen videos in Japan where people are wearing masks all the time.
Yeah.
You know, for years now.
And that's just because they are so heavily populated that you just never know what somebody has that you may, there may not even be a vaccine available for it. There's no way to get inoculated against whatever somebody might have when you're talking about millions and billions of people, especially during cold and flu seasons. And of course, a couple of weeks ago, I read a really interesting statistic that there are still about 20,000 flu deaths this year. It feels like coronavirus, you know, kind of encapsulated everything, and it did. Earlier this morning, NPR reporting that there's over 600,000 deaths in America, being followed closely on the heels of Brazil, where there's just over 500,000 deaths in that country as well. But, you know, the flu was still a thing, though it feels like it wasn't. You know, I didn't get sick. Of course, I'm taking my vitamins, I'm working out, eating healthy. You know, a lot of people, you know, the quote-unquote, like the freshman 15, you put on the COVID-19 sitting around the house.
COVID-30.
Right, the COVID-30. I was one of those people who did the opposite sort of thing. And I started working out at home. I've got, you know, I had some old weights in the corner of the garage that I dusted off, an old rowing machine as well I've had for a couple of years. And so I was able to kind of keep myself active because I was going stir crazy, even though I was still coming to work. I was still at the office. Mike, you were still here in the building as well throughout this whole thing. And so it's one of those things where it's, you know, you see those front facing service employees. I think, Mike, that they're going to be the ones who are going to probably be wearing masks, and we're going to see those shields that are up at the grocery stores. I bet those never go away just because it's a way to go ahead and continue to protect your employees as well as the consumers/customers that are in those buildings.
I mean, we still have colds around, we still have flus around. So, I mean, I didn't get the flu, and I didn't get COVID-19, thank God, during this time. I'm knocking on our wooden desk over here. it's just going to be people's comfort level, how they feel about it. There are going to be people who feel like, nah, you know, I don't want to wear a mask. I'm going to ditch it. You know, that's their prerogative, but I have no problem with people keeping their mask on. I got to see the Sox recently, and that was my first time being around so many people.
Yeah, what was that like? I've had family members who have been to the games as well already this season.
It's a little off-putting.
Okay.
Because not everybody's wearing masks, but you're thinking, well, this vaccine better work. Yeah. You're trying to enjoy the game and everything. So when I got into those situations where I was really like on the concourses, I put the mask on. When I'm at my seat eating a hot dog or something, you know, take it off. But it really determines how much people are close to me. Now, Chicago, I believe, are going to be lifting all of its COVID-19 restrictions in about a week or so. So I guess that's going to mean 100% capacity at the stadiums. I shouldn't be saying that if I don't know for sure, but I thought I did hear that Lori Lightfoot was going to lift all the restrictions in about a week or so.
Yeah,
so.
June 11th, actually, my birthday.
Happy Chicago birthday.
Opens up, and it'll be interesting to see, especially when you look at, you know, the Cubs and the White Sox right now, both in first place in the Central Divisions in the AL and NL. You know, I know there's a lot of fans who are clamoring to get back, and, you know, people kind of see that, you know, the first ball game, the hot dog, the beer is that rite of passage for the summer. Of course, nationally, we have the goal of a 70% vaccination rate by the 4th of July is what President Biden wants to put forth. And, you know, I think the big story locally is just how well Lake County's done with their vaccination rates and just... you know, being able to start to move forward to get back to some sort of life as we knew it pre-pandemic. But, you know, I will say this. I grew up in a household, and I'm sure a lot of us did, that if you were sick, you still went to a party. Sometimes you still went to school.
You went to work.
You still went to work.
Suck it up.
Yeah, you suck it up. And it's like you wear it as almost a badge of honor, like, oh, I'm feeling a little under the weather today, but, you know, I'm here and trucking through. And, you know, our office manager here, I've got a running joke with her. I'm like, how many sick days have I taken in, like, the decade I've been here? And she's like, maybe 10. You know, I'm one of those that doesn't get sick a lot, but I've come to work with a head cold, not feeling the greatest. And I think the last year, 2020, COVID-19, all the way through to where we sit currently, has really made people adjust how they act and interact and react in those types of situations where, you know, I think it's no longer a social faux pas where somebody says, cough, cough, I'm sick, I can't make the party, sorry, right? You still want to go to the party. You want to be the good friend, the good family member, the good neighbor to show up and be, you know, hospitable with those people. But now it's like, you know what? If you're not feeling good, there's more parties down the road. There are more ball games to go to. There are more concerts to see. You know, there are more restaurants to eat at. Stay home if you're feeling sick. I think people are following that.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because I don't think I've been around many people in the past year who are outwardly sick, either with the flu or with a cold, because there has been that society pressure now. Like, if you're sick, I mean, I've worked in newsrooms all my life. It's funny, back in my Post Tribune days, which is now almost 20 years ago, we had a reporter who covered health issues, and he would always be coming in sick. I mean, one time sneezing and the flu, like, he's the most unhealthiest health reporter in media, and it was true. And now it would be like, hey, go home, stay home. I don't think anybody would be putting up with that now, because you don't know if it's COVID or just the flu, and it's just, who, you know, and with so many people still working from home, just keep it there.
You know what? Talking about working from home, Mike, I am over the conference call. I am done with it. I am over it. And
Zoom calls.
The Zoom calls. I'm the only person now on any of my meetings who joins by phone.
Oh,
I'm like, you don't need to see me. I don't need to see you.
Yeah, nothing's going on.
Your cat, and I haven't showered. I'm disheveled, and, you know, gone are those days of, like, you know, the the Zoom happy hours and stuff, and the drinking with friends and family.
Yeah,
over
I never liked that.
I thought that was kind of weird to begin with. I prefer to drink in solace, as I always have, in a dark corner,
crying.
That's right, into my glass of whiskey. But you know, for some people, they really needed that connection, and it's tough, or they wanted to keep up the appearance of, hey, we're going to get through this. This is just, you know, a temporary thing, as opposed to, oh, wow, this is still going on. But, you know, as things are opening up, as bars and restaurants open up, especially around here in the region, you know, a lot of those things have kind of fallen by the wayside. I'm really looking forward to being able to get out to the local festivals this summer.
Yeah,
I live in Crown Point, and so, you know, the Crown Point Beer Fest and the Taste of Crown Point, the farmers markets, and
yeah, there's something always going on downtown Crown Point.
Yeah, and it's like, that's the stuff I
think. Too much, actually.
It feels, you know what, when I deal with traffic on Broadway, it feels that way for sure. But, you know, the county fairs are coming back this year Lake and Porter County. So I'm looking forward to that stuff, being able to get outside, stretch my legs, and, you know, let my toddler run around and play in the dirt and the mud and just have fun, because he's been cooped up for, you know, the last year.
A lot
as well.
Of it is still dependent, though. I mean, not everybody has gotten the vaccine. Obviously, there are people who are pushing back on it. But just this week, the Indiana Department of Health wrapped up its FEMA, Federal Emergency Management, vaccination site in Gary at the old Roosevelt High School. 63,000 people were vaccinated through that facility, which opened up, I believe, in April and ran for several months. It just wrapped up this week. So, you know, people are getting the vaccine, and I know people still have some consternation about it, but it does work. It does work. How do we know that it works? It's because this time last year, nursing homes were shut down.
Right.
The elderly were dying, unfortunately.
You couldn't go visit anybody in the hospital.
And now they're not dying anymore. They're not. Thank God. I mean, we still have, just, you know, looking at today's Indiana Department of Health count, 405 positive cases of COVID-19, 5 new deaths. So, you know, people are still getting it. It's much slower, though.
But we were talking like thousands of people last year. Like the daily rate was over 1,000 people.
Okay,
in Indiana.
But think about it. Think about it. This time last year, when it started, if we were to tell you that with this COVID-19 pandemic, almost 750,000 people are going to test positive, you would be like, what? And more than 13,000 people are going to die. Those are the numbers as it stands today. I think we would be freaking out, and rightfully so. I mean, those numbers, it's still scary when you look at that.
I remember early on, we had a story from our partners at IPBS, Indiana Public Broadcasting News, and they ran a story where Dr. Chris Box said that she believed there were probably about 80,000 Hoosiers at that time who had coronavirus. And that number got so much pushback from people where they're just like, there's no way all of these people have it. But looking back, and that story just kind of always sat in the back of my mind, looking back, and it's clear that, you know, she probably underestimated at that time about a year ago, because, you know, you have almost 1 million people testing positive for COVID-19. I know a handful of people who had tested positive. Thank goodness none of them, so far as I know, have any long-term health repercussions from it. And nobody that I know has died from it. But, you know, there are stories on the national level where people have had entire families obliterated by COVID-19. And that's really, you know, we think about like, oh, it's the flu, or it's the cold, or I had it and I didn't feel anything, whatever it is. There are still people out there who this will have serious, serious ramifications for. And, you know, it goes back to the mask thing. I don't really mind wearing the mask if I'm at the grocery store, if I'm at the restaurant. If I look like an outlier, I look like an outlier. I mean, if you saw my face, you'd be like, yeah, he's kind of an outlier anyway. Keep the mask on him. You know, great career in radio. But it's something that I think as things do open up, you know, I think, Mike, like you said, it goes back to how comfortable do people feel with a mask versus without a mask. And, you know, we see those numbers drop, right? It's 400 people now is the average daily rate of, like, what is that? Not even, maybe 1%, less than 1%. you know, in terms of the daily positivity rate. It's pretty remarkable to see that kind of a drop in the numbers when last year, like you said, we were basically standing in the middle of the forest and there was a inferno just all around us and we didn't know what was happening.
You know, I think the key now is getting through this summer, things opening up, and just how long do these vaccines work? Are you going to have to get a booster? And then in the fall, as we head back inside, and things are going to start to emerge, people are going to start be working from, you know, heading back downtown Chicago or offices, wherever they are. That's when the real proof in the pudding is going to, you know, that's really when it's really going to capture us, when it's the fall and we're having to stay in more. But right now, it's the start of summer. Let's think positive. And if you haven't gotten a COVID-19 vaccine, I think you should to protect yourself and others. Wear a mask, especially around elderly people, because anything, you know, you want to protect them because, you know, I had a mom who lived for years in a assisted living facility. And, you know, they're very fragile. And you don't want to be the one who brings in that one germ that, you know, sends them into a spiral, you know, because of your... well, you know, this is my liberties. Well, you know, it's their liberties too, from being safe, from having to get sick from this stuff. So I don't know what the big deal is. I know people have still a lot of pushback on that, but apparently a lot more people are heeding the advice to get the vaccines. I mean, President Trump, you know, people are saying he doesn't get enough credit for Operation Warp Speed. Well, you know, I'll be the first one to say thank you, President Trump, for getting the vaccine and taking it.
And I will argue that a lot of the vaccine that was created, they were done so while President Trump had Operation Warp Speed. The vaccines themselves weren't created and distributed under his plan, and so he might have had this plan and this idea, and it makes for good headlines, but there's no proof to the pudding. And I think to a certain extent as well, you hear the story that President Trump had gotten the vaccine in earlier this year, I believe.
Yeah, before he left office.
Right before he left office. His daughter Ivanka had posted on social media that she had gotten the vaccine, and a lot of supporters of her father were very, very critical of her getting that. And so you're seeing this sort of inner turmoil. And of course, on the President Trump front, I guess, well, former President Trump front, he just canceled his blog. He just fired his blog.
Yeah.
And that is kind of big news because he doesn't have Facebook anymore. He's been kicked off Twitter and Instagram. You know, and what does that mean for the future of communications for the still vocal leader of the Republican Party? And we're going to see how that plays out. Starting next year, Mike, are you ready for the 2022 election cycle? Because I'm already there. I'm already,
you know,
on the train.
There's also this idea, and it's being. I mean, they're talking about that. There's this idea that President Trump, former President Trump, will come back into office in August.
Yeah,
that it's out there. With the QAnon and all these right wing news outlets that they just, you know. They believe what they want to believe, but folks, I mean, if you're believing that stuff, I'm not sure what planet you're on, but there's no vehicle to bring him back into office. There's just none. He could run again, and hopefully, good luck to him, you know, in his next shot at the White House, but that's going to happen in about 3 years. That's not now.
and he still has to go through a lot of the State Department of New York, a lot of state attorney generals are looking at his books, so to speak. And remember, they never got Capone on murder. They never got him on rum running. They never got him on prostitution stuff, anything else illegal. They got him on tax evasion. That's how he ended up in Alcatraz.
Yeah.
And that was the end of Al Capone. So, you know, you talk about all these different sorts of like, oh, the Russian money and this money or these secrets and those secrets. You know, people are looking at the books. And it's going to be interesting to see what happens with then President Trump here over the next couple of years. And, of course, President Biden has already stated as well that he was only planning on being a one-term president. So a lot to talk about later on in 24, but, you know, let's get through the summer first.
Absolutely. Okay, well, that's going to wrap up for this segment. When we come back, we'll be talking to Karen Lauerman about development in Northwest Indiana when we return to Off Mic.
A grieving Vincennes father is creating an art exhibit for those who've lost loved ones due to COVID-19. I'm Miriam Sobe. Next time on All In, we'll hear from the artist on what drew him to the project. Then we'll tackle the topic of social media and news consumption and whether infographics are taking on a life of their own. And finally, we'll wrap up with summer vacation activities and road trips in Indiana. Join us.
Join us daily at noon here on Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM.
From celebrity interviews to upcoming local entertainment events, Midwest Beat has you covered. Music, art, comedy, magic, Tom Lounges has covered it all. Join Tom Lounges on Midwest Beat as he continues to get you the latest stories on all your favorite artists and your favorite you haven't heard yet. Listen to Midwest Beat every Friday at 1 and again at 7 p.m. right here on Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM.
We'll be taking it to the house. Travel to Gary with Let's Eat as we take on the Burger House. Meet us at the grill as we flip burgers with Stephen Clay, owner, operator, and chef of the Burger House. Join the conversation and get a chance to win a gift card from the Burger House of Gary. Dial in 769-9577. It's grilling season time, so pick up some tips on how to cook that perfect burger. Tune in to Let's Eat this Friday at 3 o'clock on 89.1 FM WLPR as my Burgermeister Sharon Jackson, Stephen Clay, and me, Chef Nick, enjoy great tasty burgers from the Burger House. Call in and join the fun. Yasu!
Well, welcome back to Off Mic on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Michael Puente with Tom Maloney. Hey, Tom.
Mike, what's going on?
Well, what's going on is that Northwest Indiana is a hot market. And how do we know that? Is because a Chicago area developer is planning to build a $20 million industrial building in East Chicago, even before any tenants are secured. Des Plaines-based Meisner Group is building the 250,000 square foot building in East Chicago, of course, just over the state line from Chicago. And joining us to talk about that is Karen Lauerman, who's the CEO of the Lake County Economic Alliance, who helped lure that group to Northwest Indiana. Hey, Karen, how are you?
Great, Mike. How are you and Tom today?
Good, good, good. So tell us, we had spoke earlier in the week just doing the news about this development. How significant of a development is this? $20 million, that's not too shabby.
No, it's not. Absolutely not. And Mike, I think the significance of this is that we have been courting the Lake County Economic Alliance, or LCEA for short, along with our regional partners, the Northwest Indiana Forum, and the Indiana Economic Development Corporation for many, many years, developers to take a look at Northwest Indiana, and in particular Lake County, Indiana, for development as the eastern suburb of Chicago. So after all of this courtship, we've been able to attract companies like Crow Development in Miraville, as an example, but now the Misner Group to 4400 Homerly in East Chicago for infill redevelopment. So it's pretty significant. It's the years of work and relationship building are coming to fruition as we move forward.
You know, Karen, even though, you know, obviously we've been around here for a long time and your group has been around, you know, there's still a lot of, if you're in the Chicago area, especially in those Northwest burbs where this company's from, you know, Northwest Indiana could still be sort of an unknown entity. How do you get that message out there to them?
Well, we do a lot of regional marketing. We do a lot of Lake County marketing. And for the last 7 years that my colleague Don Kolobowski and I have been at LCEA, we've been talking to brokers, developers, companies We go to regional conferences in the Chicagoland market. We go to national conferences through site with site selectors and site consultants. In fact, Don will be going to Richmond, Virginia here in a couple of weeks to talk with 25 site selectors one-on-one. We have these opportunities. Then we have the IEDC is behind us 100% in our activities, and then they do their own trade missions. So it's just making sure that we connect with the right people, make sure we stay in the marketplace, that we don't, we're not a one-and-done type of visit. You know, we go in, we go to a conference and say, yay, we did our job. No, we stay there. It's been consistency. We usually are in the Chicagoland market 5 to 8 times on official conference business a year. And then we probably have about 20 to 25 visits a year with various brokers, developers, and other conferences that happen to be in Chicago. So we maximize our proximity to Chicago to go and visit with all these folks. And the message has remained clear. It is a very good opportunity, a good business climate for people to look at, and it affects their bottom line. We know these are strategic decisions that the companies make, and we're here to help them look at all of the aspects, make an educated decision for their business operation, and then look at the opportunities that the state of Indiana provides outside of proximity to Chicago that make it more beneficial for them.
How tough, how difficult has it been over the last year with the pandemic? How have you been able to make those connections during this time?
The good news is, Mike, and you've got these relationships too in your line of work. You cultivate those relationships even in the hard times or the challenging times. You reach out to folks. You ask how they're doing. Anything that we can help you with. More often than not, in 2020 and early into 2021, companies, brokers, site selectors had the opportunity to, I don't want to say sit back and relax because no one sits back and relaxes these days, but had the opportunity to take the time to evaluate where their companies are or where their clients are. And so they did a bit more analysis and found that truly, even though LCEA and Northwest Indiana want a strong Chicago market and a strong Illinois for the total Midwest picture, Indiana kept up front, especially Lake County with, you know, our proximity to Chicago, but all of Northwest Indiana kept in the forefront of these evaluations. And we're seeing a lot of that come to fruition here in the last several months and even more to come.
Let me ask you something, Karen. I'm not trying to get, you know, too into the weeds of your discussions with the Meisner Group, but what were some of the things that maybe, or, you know, not just with them, but other firms that you approach, what are the surprising things that they come to learn about Northwest Indiana, Lake County, when they're deciding whether to invest in this area? What are, you know, we're thinking, how could they not know about this? But what are the surprising things that you make them aware of?
They're surprised we work as a team across Northwest Indiana. They're surprised that economic development and municipal leaders, that could be a mayor, a town manager, the elected council, the appointed various commissions, we all work as a team to welcome them. And of course, with the IEDC as our state partner. But that's very surprising to them because if they're accustomed to other areas of the country, and unfortunately to our neighbors to the west, they don't get that approach. They don't get this coordinated approach to say, hi, welcome to our community, welcome to our county, welcome to our region, welcome to our state. That's number one. Number two, they hear us say that it's only 30 minutes to downtown Chicago, or it's faster to reach Northwest Indiana from Aurora than it is to get into the city, or from the city to Joliet. We brag about that, but when they actually travel it, it's very surprising to them. They can't believe that time, the drive time, is truly only 30, 40 minutes dependent. Sometimes they're surprised at the willingness of a community to work with them. We've got communities in Lake County that will offer, in addition to its incentives, which are, you know, tax increment financing or tax abatement. Those are typical incentives. Sometimes we've got communities that say, hey, we'll help you with infrastructure, and we'll put some infrastructure in because you're going to hire X amount of people. We also, they're surprised at how we coordinate on workforce. We bring our university system in, our certified technology programs at the high school. We bring in our Ivy Tech Community College. We bring in Center of Workforce Innovations. And on top of it, many of our communities have their own job fairs. So they're very surprised to see all of these entities trying to help them find their workforce and make sure that there's training and support available for those new workers. So they're surprised about those types of things. You know, the business climate is very popular, but that's a known entity because of our 1-2-3 percent tax caps that are constitutional. So those things are unknown to them. It's these other soft, you know, the soft components of welcoming communities. We're here to work with you. Typically, non-bureaucratic process to get through special zoning or variances or things of that nature. We're pretty straightforward, and we've got elected officials and appointed officials that are happy to talk with them. In many cases, the elected officials say, hi, how are you? Welcome to our community. And that's the last they see of them. In our particular, in Lake County in particular, our elected officials and our appointed officials always check in with their, you know, with their new companies or with their new developments. And it's really refreshing because they actually feel mm-hmm. welcome. We just don't say, welcome to Indiana. They actually feel it in the process.
Well, you're listening to Off Mic on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Michael Puente. We're speaking with Karen Lauerman, CEO of the Lake County Economic Alliance. Karen, let me ask you this. Before we get any further, tell me a little bit about the Alliance, because I know you've been around for a long time. What's your history?
Sure. The Lake County Economic Alliance was formed out of a need that at the time, Governor Mitch Daniels said Lake County was missing out on a lot of opportunities. There was no one umbrella organization, no one coordinated approach. And out of the 19 municipalities, plus the unincorporated area, so 20 entities in Lake County, you know, there's only four that actually have economic development professionals on the municipal staff. And as we know, those folks sometimes get pulled in various directions. So LCEA was created out of the Lakeshore Chamber, the Crossroads Chamber, the Indiana Economic Development Corporation, and NIPSCO. And Don and I were at the Northwest Indiana Forum, the 7-County Regional Economic Development Group, working it as a project, never meant to staff it, but the opportunity came about. And so Don and I transferred from the regional approach to the consolidated county approach. And so our organization has been in existence since 2013. Don and I arrived in late 2014, and we've had about $6 to $7 billion of investment since 2015, and created we helped create and facilitate about 8,000 jobs. And those numbers do not include the legacy industries of refining and steel and their major projects. So these are other projects outside of the BP modernization, the acquisition by Cleveland-Cliffs of mm-hmm. ArcelorMittal and the U.S. Steel project. So I think we're doing pretty well, and that's $6 billion with a B, Mike.
Wow. And we also know Don Kolobowski. I've known him for a long time. We met him during his time on the East Chicago City Council. So it always helps to have somebody who understands and knows the ins and outs of government. Well, let me ask you this. You talk about the firms when they come in, they get this feel of, you know, coming into Indiana. You know, here in Lake County and Northwest Indiana, we can often feel separated from the rest of the state. How much of a partner is the state of Indiana, and can politics sometimes get in the way of that?
actually, the nice part about the IEDC, the Indiana Economic Development Corporation, is that they are a quasi-governmental agency. They were started by Mitch Daniels so that it cut the bureaucratic process out of state incentives and coordination. We've had a longstanding relationship with the now Interim Secretary of Commerce, Jim Staton. He was previously here in Northwest Indiana. And we have our regional director, Matt Sultanovitz. If a lead comes in to the state, we're aware of that. We work together and collectively to bring that project to fruition. If a lead comes into LCEA, independent of the state, we make sure that we bring them in as appropriate to the state for state incentives. So there's been collaboration since our inception, and I think that they're very happy, and I'm not speaking for them, but I think that they're very happy that there's a nonpartisan, unbiased umbrella organization to coordinate these activities for all of the communities. Because, again, for those communities with economic developers or a team that handles economic development, we're an extension of their staff. And for those municipalities in the county that don't have formal economic development professionals or a team or a person to handle it, we are their staff. And so it's been a great relationship with the state. We've had, you build those relationships, you maintain those relationships, and the idea is that we work collectively to land the companies. And, we're very fortunate. You mentioned politics, Mike. We're very fortunate that as a public-private nonprofit entity, we're supported not only by the private sector, but all of the communities through the Lake County Board of Commissioners. They are using the EDIT funds, the Economic Development or Local Option Income Tax funds, to support our entity for sustainable operation. We don't have a grandiose budget. There's two of us, and we have a new part-time person on board. But the idea is that we stay lean, we stay mean, and we go after these projects and deliver for the county, the communities, and the companies.
Well, I've known you and Don for a long time. There's nothing mean about you two. You may be lean, but there's no mean in you guys. So,
we're aggressive in getting those projects.
Aggressive, Mike. Aggressive. That's a better word. Karen Lauerman is the CEO of the Lake County, Indiana Economic Alliance. Karen, thank you so much for talking with us today on Off Mic.
Well, thank you, Mike, and thank you for your support over the years and Lakeshore Public Television's and Lakeshore Radio's support over the years in covering the things that we do in economic development and allowing us this format to give a part of our story. We really appreciate it.
No problem. And we'll be back with more Off Mic.
The Department of Agriculture has pledged billions to help farmers of color, but similar promises have been made in the past, and many farmers are skeptical. That story on the next All Things Considered from NPR News.
Tune in today at 4 o'clock for All Things Considered here on Lakeshore Public Radio.
Welcome back to Off Mic on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Michael Puente. Well, we're coming here to the summer season with both Chicago baseball teams, in first place, and it's going to be a very exciting summer. But one of the bigger controversies right now has nothing to do with baseball. It's about tennis. It's about the French Open. It's about a certain top-ranked player or near top-ranked, Naomi Osaka. She pulled out of the French Open because she didn't want to do any press conferences following that, and it's caused a big stir and helping to kind of sort this out from a sports writer, sports reporter's perspective is WBEZ's sports contributor, Cheryl Ray Stout. Hey, Cheryl, how are you?
Good, Michael. How are you?
Good, good. It's summertime out there. You heading to the beach today?
No.
No.
I don't like beaches.
All right. Okay. Well, let's get back to the news right now. We're talking about a little bit about Naomi Osaka. Big stir over there. She's saying she got fined for not doing a press conference at the French Open. She's saying she was doing it for her mental health. I'm not trying to criticize her for that, but I don't know if it's kind of a weak excuse or not. I mean, only thing you have to do is ask her a few questions after that. What's your perspective on this? On just generally, just professional athletes who sometimes don't like talking to the press.
Well, most don't like talking to the press, but it has been part of what they do, because in order to promote the sport, you have to talk to the media. Now, with that said, what happened to Naomi should land on the tournament folks for doing it and not handling it correctly. Naomi started having some issues in 2018 when she beat Serena Williams for the U.S. Open, and she got booed by the fans in the stands. And so she's had some of these issues that have been brewing since 2018. So with that said, the thing about tennis, it's a very different sport to cover. I've covered it in the past. And you are by yourself sitting there at the table. And in other sports, and I've covered big events. I've covered the NBA Finals. I've covered the Super Bowl. And there's more players to talk to deal with. And if you have a player that would have something like Naomi, they wouldn't probably be available to talk to. So it's a different sport. And back when I covered this, I'll never forget this, because when this story came up about Naomi, there was a young tennis player named Michael Chang. He was from New Jersey, and he was 16 years, I think it was, yeah, he was 16 years old, coming to Chicago to do a pro tennis event. And sitting next to him was his mother. And, you know, when I heard about Naomi, I remember how difficult it is for a young person to deal with media. And the thing is, back then, though, it was not a big group. Nowadays, the contingent is so big, and you have bloggers, and you have people with agendas when it comes to the big tournaments. So that's an issue. And here's one other thing for Naomi, probably is not being said, is that she is from Japan. And the fact is, the Olympics is in the news because Japan has got a lot of trouble, and she would likely have been the one that was going to be asked a lot of questions about the Olympics.
Ah, okay. All right, so there's a lot of things that aren't being said that should be said, and so that's why we're talking to you about it, to get a little bit more insight. Overall, I mean, in reading a lot of people's postings about this on Facebook and on Twitter, people, you know, some fans are saying, you know, I don't really care what an athlete has to say after a tournament or a game. I just want to see their performance. But I think sometimes people are being disingenuous, because they do, you know, watch a lot of ESPN, and people want to know how. Imagine if LeBron James didn't say anything after last night's defeat. You want to hear about what his plans are. What happened? Was he injured? Is this the end for him? People want to hear. Imagine if he just clams up and don't say anything. Any athlete. What if Tom Brady said, just won a Super Bowl? No, that's it. No comments. You know, there are contractual obligations. Yeah, you're promoting the sport. You're, you know, granted, it's a different sport in tennis. You are more one-on-one. And I guess from my perspective, I'm just like, I don't feel news reporters or sports reporters are threatening. You're just answering questions from people who aren't as good as you. You're just answering that. But I guess there's a certain amount of pressure that comes with it.
It's a double-edged sword when it comes to that. The thing I always found, and I've dealt with big events, I've dealt with small events, and whenever you're talking to the person that lost, particularly, you showing empathy is really the right way to do it. The problem is, you have people that will, like, you know, enjoy putting a dagger in these people's, you know, when they're down. And the thing about what the majority of the sports media, we are the consumer advocate for the person paying the ticket. If you only got your information from the tournaments or the teams, you're not getting the full story. You're not getting a lot of truth. And yes, you have to go through the minutiae of some people that don't have, you know, that have their agendas. But on the large scale, for most of us, we want the truth, we want honesty, and we want to know the whys. Why did it happen? And for us, it is important for us to let the athlete tell us, not for us to, you know, circumvent and make it a story that's not there.
How would you have handled this situation with Naomi Osaka? Would you have fined her? Is it more of a press thing? Is the French Open mishandling it and making it look like It's a press issue. I mean, how should this be handled going forward?
The French Open tournament people are totally at fault with this. This was on their watch. They should have handled it. They should have talked to her. The problem is the French media is really difficult. People think people are bad here. The French media is, they're tough. And so there's probably some antagonism going on between their media and the tournament people. The tournament people should have not fined her, just said, look, we want to find out what's wrong, and we'll deal with it privately. And then when we have something to say, and they do it collectively with Naomi Osaka and the tournament people to the public. But this, the way they handled it, they put all the onus on the media. It's not the media's fault. They were just there to do their job with, of course, the caveat I just said, that the media there is a little, tough. But it should not have been Naomi having to, be given a fine. She was fined by the tournament because she didn't talk. That was bogus. That was totally off track of what should have been done. They should have handled it in a much more sensitive manner.
Cheryl, how much of this is a thing because she's the number one ranked singles tennis player for women in the world versus if she was ranked like number 400?
That's right? Absolutely on the nose. If she was, and the thing is, when you're at the top, let's look at what Serena Williams has gone through in her career, what she has dealt with. And so Naomi is also now in that league where she's going to get really the lion's share of the positive, but also the negative. And sometimes that's really difficult to handle. Again, years ago when I was covering tennis a lot, because we used to have tennis tournaments here all the time, the pros, I'll never forget Jennifer Capriati. I think she was 14 or 15 when I saw her, and she was totally a difficult situation for her, and she had a family member pushing her. So they have dealt with so much at a young age that it's not surprising. It's not surprising at all to me that when they get to this point, when they're at the top, that things are fragile for them.
Yeah. We've seen that. We know the Serena Williams, the sisters, they had a really tough father pushing them. Same thing with Tiger Woods. They really focus in on the playing of the sport, but maybe dealing with the media and that pressure. From my perspective, I'm thinking this Naomi Osaka has been so successful. I guess I just don't feel, how can a reporter, it seems like a tougher challenge than the person she's playing against. But I guess a lot of that criticism can get into you. You're feeling like, what can I do to win these people over? You're going to win some matches, you're going to lose some matches. But she's definitely the future of the sport, and mm-hmm. It's a shame that she's feeling this way. Hopefully she gets some assistance with dealing with it, and maybe it's just that maturity. As you get older, maybe you get thicker skin.
And the one thing about certain sports, when you are really by yourself, you have the other tennis players, yes, you have the other golfers, but their road is generally very isolated. They are isolated in schooling. They are isolated in their travel. They are, so it's not the same as a team sport. So it has a different psyche. And I think they really do have to be much more mentally tougher because of the fact that they live and die by what they do by themselves.
Yes. Well, Cheryl, we'll have to leave it there. Well, next time we talk to you, we'll get an update on both the Chicago White Sox and Cubs. They're both in first place.
And 100% fans for starting next week.
Next week. So it's got to be a fun time for you to cover two first place teams in Chicago. So again, Cheryl, thank you for always joining us on Off Mic.
You're welcome, Michael.
Well, that's all going to do for our show for today on Off Mic. You can catch this show again as a podcast by going to lakeshorepublicradio.org. I hope you enjoyed listening to us. If you have a story idea or a segment having to do with Northwest Indiana or not, maybe you have a book that's coming out, new restaurant, you can reach us on Facebook. You go to Lakeshore Public Radio and send a message through there. I'm on Facebook, so we're not hard to find. I know Tom Maloney is not hard to find, so it was always great to hear from Tom Maloney. So, Tom, thank you so much for joining me today, Shotgun, on Off Mic today.
Thank you, Mike.
Again, get out there, enjoy the summer, have a safe weekend, and just enjoy yourself. Thank you.
WLPR, FM Lowell.